And now, live from the Daniel Scappin Studio, deep in the foothills of the North Georgia Mountains, it's Mike Malloy. Everybody, welcome to this podcast. It is Tuesday, June 5th. Glad you could make it. Hey, we have no sponsors tonight, and Kathy tells me we don't have another sponsor until June 8th, which is Friday. This is our spring fundraiser, so it's really kind of important to sponsor an hour. Normally it would cost $100, but because we are desperate and hanging on by our toenails, we have reduced it to $50. So please sponsor an hour, okay? Go to MikeMalloy.com and follow the prompts there. It'll tell you how to do this. Sponsorship for $50. Normally it's $100. And we're doing this until June 21st or 22nd, whenever the first day of summer occurs this year. All right, I've got a couple of odds and ends here before I get into the overthrow of the United States government by the Trump gangsters. But I've got a couple here. Now, this first one, I have to tell you, you know how your local television station or network news will say, now we have some video to show you, but it's a little bit intense. So we want to warn our viewers, it may be too intense for some of the folks, blah, blah, blah. Well, that's what this first item I have. It may be, what, Kathy's looking at me like, oh no. You're not going to like this, Kathy. You better put plugs in your ears, for real. But it is kind of awful. And the reason I bring it up, the reason I brought this to the program, to the podcast tonight, is to demonstrate the incompetence of some of the adults who are in charge of our kids when they go to school. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm a strong advocate of school teachers. I'm a strong advocate of the strikes that have occurred, the walkouts to secure higher wages or better funding for the schools. But I think better funding for the schools would include raising the annual salaries to a point where people like the guy I'm going to mention to you, a school teacher, would not have been hired. And you'll understand when I tell you this awful story. All right, this occurred at Preston Junior High School. These are kids from 6th through 8th grade, 6th, 7th, and 8th grade. And this was in Preston, Idaho, in Idaho. The teacher's name is Robert Crossland. He's a biology teacher. The story was reported by both the Associated Press and the Washington Post. Now, this teacher, Robert Crossland, has been accused of a misdemeanor, animal cruelty. Preston, Idaho, if you're keeping track, was the setting for the indie cult film Napoleon Dynamite, which has nothing to do with what I'm going to tell you. It's just included here in the article. Now, what this guy did, Robert Crossland, Jesus Christ. I don't know. Should I don't know. Maybe I I know you don't know what it is. Okay, I'll just go ahead. Now, this is a middle school teacher. The Washington Post reports it this way. The students watched as a sick puppy was eaten alive by a snapping turtle in this guy's biology classroom. You've heard it? Oh, my God. The incident brought new attention to this town of just over 5,000. Calls and vague threats prompted authorities to bolster police protection or police presence at schools in the district. The allegations of this crazy son of a bitch, this so-called school teacher, surfaced after several parents complained. A mother of two boys at the school told the Preston Citizen, the newspaper, I guess, that the puppy was terminally ill and was given to the biology teacher by its grief-stricken owner. The mother said that the biology teacher fed the puppy to the turtle in a graphic demonstration of the circle of life for his students. That's bullshit. Circle of life? What the fuck? What? Circle of life is a biology teacher taking an ill puppy and feeding it to a snapping turtle? The school superintendent there called the incident, quote, a regrettable circumstance, end quote. And the superintendent said, now, just a minute, this occurred after school hours and it wasn't in front of a full class. Now, the incident has apparently, this was picked up by the wire service, and it's gotten people pissed off around the world. But some parents in Preston, Idaho, have come to the defense of this biology teacher. Of course, of course. You know, you're always going to find that, right? Farrah Lynn Hansen, who's a mother of two boys, told the newspaper in Preston that her sons were more upset about the outrage among school staff leveled at the teacher. Now, I don't know about you, but I have known some 11, 12, and 13-year-old boys in my lifetime. And you know what? They're not really known for their compassion, boys that age. They're not really known for their ability to see cruelty and identify it. As a matter of fact, boys that age sometimes are perpetrators of the most outrageous kind of cruelty. So when this mother says, oh, my two sons were more upset about all the controversy, lady, that's probably because you have raised your sons to be amoral jerks with no conscience, no ability to see something cruel being committed when it's being committed right in front of them. Anyway, this mother said, quote, I am not upset. I felt like it was the more humane thing for the teacher to do than just to leave it to die. Feed a dying puppy to a snapping turtle who is going to eat it in bites while the puppy suffers and dies. And this crazy bitch said it was the humane thing for the school teacher to... Well, how the fuck do people like this become parents? Wouldn't the humane thing... Of course, this woman, this mother of two, God help her sons, this mother of two might have considered that the humane thing to do would have been to put the puppy to death, carbon monoxide, injection of cyanide, but to allow a snapping turtle to tear chunks of it off while it dies? What the fuck? I don't know who I fault the more, the school teacher or this mother. I think both of them. Jesus Christ. Now, the irony here, despite what this woman called a humane killing of the puppy, it also led to the turtle's death. The turtle died too. I guess when you eat chunks of dying puppy, you're going to die too. I mean, I just fucking don't believe this stuff. Then who did they feed the turtle to? A goose. And then the goose died. And then they fed the goose to what? A fox. Then the fox died. You know, we have an Aesop's fairy tale here. The whole incident triggered an investigation, and state wildlife authorities seized and euthanized the turtle after it was determined it was a non-native species. So the turtle didn't die from eating chunks of dying puppy. The turtle died because it was euthanized. Now, let me ask you, don't you think this fucked up biology teacher could have euthanized the puppy? And made the same point to his students about what this asshole considers the circle of life? Give me a fucking break. Turtles don't necessarily or don't often eat dying puppies. The school did not return a request seeking comment. Now, this guy is the case was handed off to the Idaho Attorney General after the county prosecutor, where this ugly event happened, claimed a conflict of interest. So there's a case being built against this filthy goddamn biology teacher. And if convicted, he faces up to 6 months in jail and a $5,000 fine. Now, I can't get that image out of my mind. I mean, what did they do? Did the teacher tie the little puppy down? I mean, if I'm a puppy and I'm sick and a turtle starts eating me, I would probably try to move away. Stop talking.
I don't want to hear this.
Now, this incident came before another controversial wildlife classroom killing. Here's the other one. This one happened in Florida. A teacher there was accused of drowning two little raccoons and a possum as high school students watched. The teacher said that they were responsible for killing chickens kept in his class. So he drowned them. Authorities declined to file charges to this teacher, against this teacher, after it was determined there was no intent to torture or harm the raccoons. What? If you kill a raccoon, you're not harming it. You're fucking killing it! Raccoons in Florida are considered nuisance animals. The main nuisance animal on this planet are human beings. The teacher, Dewey Bruton III, decided to take early retirement. He's gone. So this class, high school students, got to watch two little raccoons and a possum being drowned. I guess it's a little better than being eaten alive, right? Ow, ow, ow! Ow, ow! Oh, my God. Molly told you that story? She showed it to you? What the hell is Molly reading? She goes on news feeds. This is pretty scary. You know, my 13-year-old daughter now, she'll come and say to me, what about blah, 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 and something to do with the Russian investigation. And I look at her and say, where did you get that? Because I know she doesn't watch television news ever. I said, where did you get that? She said, off the internet. So you're following the news now, Molly? You're following this? She said, well, you know, sometimes. Or it'll pop up on Instagram. Okay. Oh, oh, oh. I'm not laughing about the incident. It just makes me sick. It makes me sick that a school teacher could subject anybody to that kind of torture, that he could do that kind of torture. But to do it in front of 12 and 13-year-olds, I'm sure they'll remember it all their lives, wouldn't you think, Kathy? This little episode about the circle of life. Well, Ronnie Jackson has his ass in a sling now. Remember him? Rear Admiral? Ronnie Jackson? Rear Admiral? You know, that's like a Brigadier General, I guess. One star, maybe had two, I don't know. But further proof that anyone who associates themselves with Trump winds up either being investigated, indicted, had their careers destroyed, because Trump is a toxic cesspool of crime. And if you get close to this fucker, you're doomed. Well, guess what happened to Ronnie Jackson? Department of Defense Inspector General has formally launched investigation into Ronnie Jackson. That's according to the spokesman for the attorney or for the Inspector General. This was in an email this morning to Talking Points Memo. Jackson served under both Obama and Trump. And you remember he was nominated by Trump to be the head of the Veterans Affairs Department. Christ. Anyway, soon after Jackson was named by Trump, multiple allegations started to pop up from coworkers accusing him of drinking on the job, illegally giving out oxycodone. I wonder if Rush Limbaugh knows this guy. I bet he does. And creating a hostile and abusive work environment. So Jackson withdrew his nomination 2 months ago and stopped being Trump's personal doctor. But he stayed on as a general White House physician. Would you let this son of a bitch treat you? I wouldn't let this guy examine me. Jesus Christ. Woo. Anyway, after Ronnie Jackson's withdrawal, the accusations that were put together in a memo by Senator John Tester, a Democrat of Montana, the accusations were sent to the Department of Defense's Internal Inspector General's office to let them decide whether or not to pursue these charges. But when you are a flag rank officer in the United States military and you're also a fucking drug dealer, you're giving away a drug, God knows to whom, a drug that is responsible now, last year, for 60,000 deaths. Yeah. All righty then. I can't wait for Trump's tweet that will probably say, Department of Defense Inspector General, a holdover from Obama and a Democrat, has now accused the White House physician of being a mean man to his coworkers. Stop. Sad. Winning. Here's something winning. Oh, oh, oh. I can't. I can't. I just can't believe I live in a place where, and by a place, I mean planet Earth, where shit like that can happen. Okay, so Tens of thousands of people are going to die today because of starvation and disease, both of which could have been treated if we lived in a civilized solar system. I realize the murder of this puppy is nothing in the great scheme of things. But fuck the great scheme of things. I thought it was a horrible. I hope they convict this guy. I hope they put him in prison. What kind of a person does that to a defenseless little creature? I mean, moving right along. If you remember, a lot of the protesters who showed up for the asshole's inauguration back in January, a lot of those protesters were charged with conspiring to riot. This is what you do when you have decided you're going to become a fucking dictator. You claim you're going to have your opponents investigated and jailed. You claim, as you're a candidate, that anyone who is under investigation by the FBI or the Department of Justice should resign the presidency. And you also let folks know that any opposition to your ascension to the presidency should be considered treason. Well, according to the Associated Press, the man accused of conspiring to riot during Trump's inauguration has been acquitted by a D.C. jury. 29-year-old Casey Weber, who lives there, was found not guilty yesterday on several charges. The jury continued to deliberate on charges against Weber's three co-defendants. The Post reported that the trial in D.C. Superior Court is the second involving defendants charged in connection with protests. The first trial resulted in not guilty verdicts for all six co-defendants. Prosecutors have dropped charges against more than 150 other defendants, including some that were dismissed last week after a judge found the U.S. Attorney's Office failed to turn over video to the defense. Exculpatory evidence. Prosecutors say charges are still pending against more than 40 defendants, all of whom I'm reasonably certain will be found innocent. Not guilty. I mean, that's the jury can't come back and say we find the defendant innocent. No, they can only say not guilty or guilty. But when you protest the inauguration of a person who is obviously incompetent to assume that office, a threat to every single person on earth, and who has committed treason to get to the inauguration stand, then goddamn yes, there should be demonstrations against that person. But it's just one further example of Trump's decision that what he says goes. What someone else says is immaterial, irrelevant, inconsequential, doesn't mean shit. I am the leader. And we thought Reagan was running the imperial presidency, or was it Nixon? What the fuck is wrong with these Republican presidents? It seems like every single one of them, going back to, I guess Eisenhower didn't commit treason, but starting with Nixon, can you think of a Republican president? And let's not let George Herbert Walker Bush off the hook. I realize he's a very sick old man, but the shit that he did, where it concerned the mining of Nicaragua's harbors, which is a war crime. God damn it, it's a war crime. Nixon, Reagan, authorizing Reagan, the trading of TOW missiles, or the selling of TOW missiles, to a country considered to be our adversary. I don't know why in the hell we don't like Iran, but that's a different topic altogether. So Reagan authorizes through this traitorous little fuck, Oliver North, to go ahead and sell TOW missiles to this PTSD-infected son of a bitch, Oliver North, who had the little incident of running naked through the Bethesda Naval Hospital with a loaded .45 sidearm in his hand, screaming all kinds of shit until he was subdued. And then, of course, you had Herbert's son, George, who committed the worst war crime, I think, in the history of the United States, the invasion of another country and the slaughter of its citizens. I can't get over that one. I can't get over it. And then Nancy Pelosi saying, no, impeachment's off the table. Well, Nancy, that resulted in Donald Trump. Impeachment's off the table. Just a war criminal. Who the fuck cares? Right? Miss Speaker of the House at the time, right? War crimes? That's not an impeachable offense. Moving right along, David Koch, you know, Charles and David Koch, two people who are determined to destroy the country in different from the way that Trump wants to destroy it. The Koch brothers want to be the Svengalis behind the curtain who manipulate so-called leaders of the country. To what end? Manipulate them to get policies put in place that the Koch brothers want put in place. Policies that are destructive to the environment, destructive to the climate, destructive to people. Oh, I know. Charles Koch spent lots of money on cancer research. Well, there's a reason for that. He has cancer. So David Koch, David, not Charles, David is stepping down also as chairman of this Americans for Prosperity Foundation. It's not Americans for Prosperity. It is rich capitalist pigs for prosperity for themselves. That's the full title. Rich capitalist pigs who want prosperity for themselves, foundation, and the rest of the country can fuck off. That's the full name of Americans for Prosperity. I bet you didn't know that, did you? So Charles announced in a letter to employees of Koch Industries this morning that Brother David's health has been in decline since he was hospitalized last summer. And Charles was not specific about the illness. However, Koch developed prostate cancer, I think, 25 years ago. And 25 years ago, prostate cancer. And since then, he has given, according to the Washington Post, he's given vast sums of money toward cancer research. For instance, he provided $217 million to the Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center, including $150 million for a new outpatient medical facility. He gave $128 million to New York's Presbyterian Hospital, $26.5 million to the MD Anderson Cancer Center, 26 and $26.2 million to the Hospital for Special Surgery in New York, $20 million to Johns Hopkins University, $10 million to Mount Sinai Medical Research, $10 million to the Children's Hospital at Stanford University for allergy research. By grace are you saved, not by works. Says so in the Bible. So, David, you can give away $1 billion, $10 billion, $20 billion. And if your body is susceptible to cancer, it doesn't make a fucking bit of difference. You know, those multiplying cells inside you that are growing out of control, they're not aware that you're a mega donor for cancer research, A, and B, if they had consciousness, they wouldn't give a fuck. So, David Koch is stepping down. Charles, in this letter to employees of Koch Industries, the letter was obtained by the Washington Post, said in part, quote, "Unfortunately, these issues have not been resolved and his health has continued to deteriorate. As a result, he is unable to be involved in business and other organizational activities like destroying the United States, denying non-whites the right to vote, torturing through all kinds of devious shit gay and lesbian men and women, not to mention transgenders, for God's sake." So all of those organizational activities, as as Charles put it, are no longer going to be managed by David. The Post put it this way: David Koch's departure will change the makeup of one of the most active and well-funded political forces in the country that has been a bulwark in not just supporting, but setting the Republican agenda. Now, a guy named Mark Holden, who helps run their political efforts, is it political efforts to try to further establish two distinct classes of people in this country, the haves and the have-nots? I know we've all heard that term, but these fuckers are serious. They are part of the haves. Their combined wealth is around $120 billion. Just these two. I think there's a couple more Kochs. Anyway, Mr. Mark Holden said in an email that the Koch network will continue to expand, even as David has to step aside. Holden said, quote, "We greatly appreciate his vital role on the board and all that he has done to help us build a strong foundation for our future success." Isn't that wonderful? Our future success? No, I'm sure, Mark, you were talking about you fascist capitalist pigs who have benefited from all the money that the Koch brothers have used to destroy America. They are involved. I had a list one time. I probably still have it here in the studio of the hundreds, literally hundreds of organizations that are like termites eating at the foundation of a building. And these organizations are like termites eating at the foundation of a democratic republic, this one. And the Koch brothers have funded those organizations. Success, our future success. The fuck do these billionaires want? You know, why don't they just go spend their money? I mean, just go, you know, go buy castles and a fleet of jets. And I don't know. What do you do when you have $120 billion? Capitalist pigs. Capitalist pigs. Well, oh, we don't need to know about all his charitable giving. Who gives a fuck? Just remember what your Bible says, David. Or is it Charles? I can't tell them apart. You know, David. I guess it's David who is stepping down. Remember what your Christian Bible says about your phony displays of wealth. And also, you might consider this. I think Jesus said this about how it's easier for a camel to pass through the eye of a needle than a rich man to enter the gates of heaven.
Oh, no!
But that's the teachings of Jesus, and these Christians have nothing to do with Jesus. Nothing. Let's take a break. Catherine, if you would, please, if you could put on some appropriate music, maybe something that would have to do with a turtle eating a little puppy. Do you have anything? Turtle eating puppy music? You do? Oh, my God. Okay. Oh, okay. Do it takes you a second to find turtle eating puppy music. Do, 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 do.
My puppy died late last fall. He's still rotting in the hall. Dead puppies aren't much fun. No, no, no. Mom says puppies' days are through. She's going to throw him in the stew. Dead puppies aren't much fun.
You know, today is election day all around the country. Primary day, I should say. The June 5th primary, that's today. I'll go over some of these in a minute. But let's move on to the idiot, the moron that's squatting in the White House, Trump. Do you know, this morning he I hate this man to the point where I've had to stop hating him because and become neutral about, you know, my emotional feelings about him. Emotional feelings, yeah. About my emotions about him, I've had to turn them off because I hate him so much it was making me sick. And it's not because I think he's an ugly bastard. It's not because of any individual thing that he's done that shows he is a putrid human being. It's the combination of everything. I don't think I've ever, in my experience, come across a human being as worthless as this son of a bitch. And to think that he's in the position that he's in is just staggering to me. But not only is he, does he treat women like shit, and he's a bully, and a liar, and a thug, and a thief, and a scum sucker, and a real bastard. I mean, pick all your pejoratives. He fits every single one of them. But he taunted NFL football players in a tweet early this morning. As you know, the Philadelphia Eagles declined. Well, let me rephrase it. Trump said he wasn't going to have the Philadelphia Eagles come to the Super Bowl winners, come to the White House. He just changed his mind. Well, the truth is only about 10, 15 players on that squad were going to show up because they don't like his fucking attitude about players taking a knee during the national anthem as a protest, not against the goddamn flag or the national anthem or any of this other shit. And either Trump knows that, and he just uses the, oh, they're showing disrespect for the flag, to juice up his base, or Trump doesn't understand what's going on. Take your pick. Either way, it shows that he has no more business being in the presidency than a goddamn jug of water does. Here's what he tweeted. Two tweets. Quote, "We will proudly be playing the national anthem and other wonderful music celebrating our country today at 3 p.m. the White House with the United States Marine Band and the United States Army Chorus honoring America. NFL, no escaping to locker rooms." And then he tweeted this. "We have had many championship teams recently at the White House, including the Chicago Cubs, Houston Astros, Pittsburgh Penguins, New England Patriots, Alabama and Clemson, national champions, and many others. National anthem and more great music today at 3 p.m. Now, those tweets came after he disinvited the Eagles from attending. Going to the White House. I don't know why the fuck they... Where did that start? That a championship sports team, football, baseball, soccer, hockey, whatever the hell it is, are supposed to go to the White House. For what? To meet a president? Now, in a statement about the Eagles, he said this. And again, this shows you the sleazy, slimy nature of this ugly man. He said, quote, "The Philadelphia Eagles are unable to come to the White House with their full team to be celebrated tomorrow. They disagree with their president because he insists that they proudly stand for the national anthem, hand on heart, in honor of the great men and women of our military and the people of our country. The Eagles wanted to send a smaller delegation, but the 1,000 fans planning to attend the event deserve better." End quote. The orange moron said that Eagles fans would still be invited to the White House to celebrate the team's win. And the Eagles fans, quote, "to be part of a different type of ceremony, one that will honor our great country, pay tribute to the heroes who fight to protect it, and loudly and proudly play the national anthem." End quote. How do you like that, base? Huh? You gonna vote for me again, right? Come on, base. God damn, I know how to stir you people up, don't I? Some of the superstars on the Eagles team said no. Were concerned an invitation to go stand anywhere near this degenerate white monster who has the power to annihilate the world anytime he wants to. And he can do it too. Yeah. Or he thinks he can do it. I love this story. I've got all these odds and ends before I get to some hardcore stuff. This is about a kid, 18-year-old. He's valedictorian at the Bell County High School class of 2018, which is about 80 miles north of Knoxville, Tennessee. And as the Post reports, Ben Bowling's graduation speech was one of the rare instances where electoral polling numbers can help us understand humor. Now, the closest a 21st century Democratic presidential candidate has come to winning the hearts and minds of the people of Bell County, Kentucky, was in 2004 when John Kerry got 39% of the people there to punch a ticket for him. But every other race has been a landslide by whoever happened to be on the Republican side of the ballot. For example, 71% voted for John McCain in 2008. 76% voted for Mitt Romney in 2012. 82% voted for Donald Trump in the 2016 election. 82% of the people in this county. So, this past Saturday, young Master Bowling, Ben Bowling, was slated to give a speech before his graduating peers and their families. And he addressed the crowd thus, kind of breaking that fourth wall in theater. He said, "This is a part of my speech where I share some inspirational quotes I found on Google." And then he said this. Here's one, quote, "Don't just get involved. Fight for your seat at the table. Better yet, fight for a seat at the head of the table." End quote. Donald Trump. The crowd went wild. That's according to a video that Master Bowling shared with the Louisville Courier-Journal. Now, their applause for God-given Donald Trump pretty much almost drowned out Bowling's next statement when he said, "Just kidding. That quote's from Barack Obama." The applause died down to silence. Someone booed. A few people in the audience were chuckling at Master Bowling's excellent bait and switch. Alicia Russell, one of the people in the audience, tweeted, according to the Courier-Journal, tweeted this, quote, "Y'all, no lie, the valedictorian just quoted Trump and everyone cheered. Then he told us, no, it was actually an Obama quote. Best part of the day. I'm rolling." End quote. Now, the deflating effect of what young Master Bowling said, God, I wish I would have been there. It was not lost on Bowling. As a matter of fact, I'm sure he anticipated that's what the reaction was going to be. So in his next quote, he went on, and the audience was silent. Here's what he said, quote, oh, Bowling told this to the newspaper, the Courier-Journal. Quote, "The crowd erupted in applause, and before they could even finish clapping, I said I was kidding, and the applause quickly died. I just thought it was a really good quote. Most people wouldn't like it if I used it, so I thought I'd use Donald Trump's name. It is southeastern Kentucky, after all." End quote. Woo! Now, the quote that this kid found on Google, well, he's not a kid, he's 18, young Master Bowling. The quote he found on Google was a remark that Obama made at a commencement ceremony about 6 years ago. He was speaking to graduates of Barnard College in New York City, or in New York. And he said at the time, as a follow-up, he said, quote, "Now more than ever, America needs what you, the class of 2012, has to offer," end quote. He went on to say this, "After decades of slow, steady, extraordinary progress, you are now poised to make this the century where women shape not only their own destiny, but the destiny of the nation and the world. But how far your leadership takes this country, how far it takes this world, well, that will be up to you. You've got to want it. It will not be handed to you. And as someone who wants that future, that better future for you and for Malia and Sasha, as somebody who's had the good fortune of being the husband and father and the son of some strong, remarkable women, allow me to offer just a few pieces of advice. My first piece of advice is this. Don't just get involved. Fight for your seat at the table. Better yet, fight for a seat at the head of the table. Barack Obama. You've got to want it. That reminds me of the full-page ad that John and Yoko used to run. And I think Yoko Ono still, I think she ran it last year in the New York Times. War is over if you want it. Remember that? War is over if you want it. That'll be up to you, but you've got to want it. Can you imagine? I know the orange asshole spoke at, what was it, the Naval Academy graduation. But can you imagine having Donald Trump pollute your graduation by flapping his fucking jaws, using words that somebody else wrote because he's an illiterate fuck? And wouldn't know what to say anyway. Now, this piece that was at the Washington Post, it goes on a little bit. I found this interesting. And they point out that Ben Bowling's speech in that corner of Kentucky isn't the only time that Trump politics has invaded a commencement address. And the Post reports that beginning 6 months after Trump was elected president, commencement exercise after commencement exercise became a battleground for promoting or protesting Trump's policies. For example, in May last year, John Cornyn, oh Christ, Republican senator from Texas who was then on Trump's shortlist to lead the FBI, he was dropped as a commencement speaker at the historically black Texas Southern University. In an online petition, students said Cornyn's views were racist and antithetical to the beliefs of many of the students there. They had threatened to boycott their own graduation. Students at Bethune-Cookman also threatened to boycott Betsy DeVos's commencement address. But administrators at Bethune-Cookman, another historically black university, did not respond to what the students said. Instead, the students booed and turned their backs on DeVos and administrators. Ultimately, the president of Bethune-Cookman interrupted DeVos's speech and said to the students, "If this behavior continues, your degrees will be mailed to you." If this behavior continues, Betsy DeVos wants to destroy public education, which has been, first it was a footpath, and then it was a sidewalk, and then it became a superhighway for black kids who certainly deserved to go to university, go to college, but couldn't afford it. And Bethune-Cookman was a place where they could go and get their advanced degrees. Betsy DeVos would see that Bethune-Cookman dies. Betsy DeVos is another racist piglet who wants to destroy public education. Destroy it. She doesn't want to modify it or improve it or fix it. She wants to rip it to fucking pieces and replace it with this Christian horseshit That is Betsy DeVos's idea of being education secretary. So the students turn their back on her. And then the president of the university has to come out and say, if this behavior continues, your degrees will be mailed to you. I'm surprised. I'm going to make a stupid statement. I'm surprised that the students didn't just give the middle finger to both DeVos and the university president and say, mail the fucking things then and walk out. I know. Now, that kind of shit didn't happen to Ben Bowling when he gave his speech in Kentucky. He, according to the Washington Post, he finished his speech, snapped some graduation pictures, and received no major backlash from administrator, peers, or parents. And he's looking forward to going to the University of Kentucky later this year. He told the Courier-Journal, quote, I'm really excited to go to college. There's more freedom in college. And there's also way more places to eat in Lexington. But it's just astonishing, isn't it? Huh? When he says a quote, don't just get involved. That was Obama. Yeah. Silence. Now, what conclusion do you draw from that? I draw one and only one. First of all, whether the words were attributed to Trump, as Bowling let the students believe for a minute, or attributed to Obama, which is where they came from, the words didn't change. They were exactly the same. What changed? Trump is a white racist, Klan-loving, fucking pig Nazi. Obama was an African-American Democratic president of the United States. So what changed? The words remained the same. What made the students cheer and then go deathly silent with a couple of them booing? Do you think it could be because Obama was colored? What do you think? Assholes. Now, I've done a couple of podcasts, at least parts of podcasts, about children who are being taken from their parents. Children whose parents approach the U.S.-Mexican border seeking political asylum or seeking asylum from the violence in their home countries that had its origins, its genesis in U.S. policies toward their countries 40, 50, 60, 70, 80, 100 years ago. And the parents who can no longer live in these countries that have been decimated by U.S. foreign policy, make the long trek from Central America across Mexico. God knows how they do it. And when they get to the border, they don't commit a crime and illegally cross. They present themselves to border agents in the U.S., and they present themselves as refugees. Not illegal immigrants, not immigrants at all, refugees. And the United States is signatory to I don't know how many UN resolutions that address the plight of refugees and how countries where these people show up, how those countries should react. The United States doesn't give a fuck about how we should react. We don't care. Especially not now. And it's, to be honest, to be fair, if this is fairness, Obama was no prince where it concerned allowing people in either. Now, I understand the U.S. needs to have immigration policies. I get that. So why don't we? And I think the reason that we don't is because this is such a convenient issue for the right-wingers, the fascists, the white supremacists to use. Oh, we're being flooded with colored people. Oh, my God, rapists, murders, MS-29 or 38 or 15, whatever the fuck, the switchblades and guns and AR-15s and drugs, and they're coming, they're coming, they're coming. So vote for me and I'll stop them. Right? But rather than respond in a humane, logical, sensible, problem-solving way, especially this lump of horseshit that is now the President of the United States, the candidate of the family values Christian crowd, lets it be known that he wants those families torn to pieces when they come to the United States seeking refugee status. Tear them to pieces. That's such a good Christian attitude, right? Tear them to pieces. Do you know what Jesus would do? I don't know either. But I have a feeling that that old rabbi carpenter, that old Palestinian Jew who wandered around the Middle East all those millennia ago would say, you're not letting them in? Well, then I won't let you in. When you present yourself at my Father's house in heaven, I won't let you in. Fuck you. I can see Jesus saying that. I don't know how you say fuck you in Aramaic, but I'm sure it's an equivalent is available, right? Or Hebrew or whatever they spoke. Latin, I don't know. But if the Christians advocate not letting these refugees in, then why should their God let them in? Has to be an answer to that somewhere. Anyway. So here's the deal. According to NBC, border agents and child welfare workers are running out of space to put children who've been separated from their parents as part of the Trump administration's new zero tolerance policy. That's according to two U.S. officials in a document obtained by NBC News. Health and Human Services officials are going to tour three bases in Texas to see if they are suitable to house these unaccompanied migrant children. Unaccompanied because they've been stolen from their parents. You know how many need housing? Imprisonment? How many of these kids who have been ripped from their parents, do you know how many are in need of housing? According to the NBC, 11,000. 11,000 children. And then NBC goes on, as of Sunday past, 2 days ago, nearly 300 of the 550 children currently in custody at U.S. border stations had spent more than 72 hours there at these stations. Who are in there? Border Patrol people. Hours is the time limit for immigrants of any age to be held in these kinds of temporary facilities. And almost half of those 300 kids are younger than 12, meaning they're classified by the Department of Homeland Security as, quote, tender age children. Tender age children. Ripped from their mothers or fathers or both and put into fucking detention to show that Donald Trump ain't messing around. You come to the United States, you stupid fuck. We're going to take your child. How's that? Now, if you're coming from Norway, bring them all. Bring all your children. We love them all in Sweden. We'll take them. But if you're coming from Guatemala or El Salvador or Honduras or Nicaragua, we will take your children, you brown bastards, from your shithole countries. This is sick. And these are tender age children. According to NBC, these stations often lack adequate bedding or separate sleeping rooms for the kids. So this person named Greg Chen, who's director of government relations for the American Immigration Lawyers Association, Greg writes, quote, "It would be highly inappropriate and even unsafe to hold children for extended periods in these short-term border facilities because they lack the adequate medical and nutritional resources for these young people." What's next, Mr. Trump, you fucker? Starve them to death? That'll show them. You bring your kids here, we're not feeding them. You bring your kids here, we're not feeding them, and if they develop a cold, we're going to let it go to pneumonia. Quickest way to get rid of you little brown shits? You think? Or am I being too harsh? Greg Chen went on, "It would place these children at risk of harm if they are housed with adults without the proper privacy that children should have." You know what that statement says? That statement says that U.S. Border Patrol agents have the potential to sexually molest these kids. What the fuck? Really? Really? That's what the statement means to me. It would place these children at risk of harm if they are housed with adults without the proper privacy that children should have. The only adults they would be housed with, remember, they're snatched away from their mothers, their fathers, their aunts and uncles, and placed in these facilities that are chock-a-block with Border Patrol agents or Department of Homeland Security agents. So who would be putting the children at risk? It's pretty obvious, right? And then the requisite, a spokesman for DHS, Department of Homeland Security, did not respond to a request for comment. Right. NBC goes on, and it gets grimmer and grimmer. The overstays at border stations are a result of a backlog at U.S. Health and Human Services, the agency responsible for sheltering migrant children longer term and matching them with relatives or foster parents in the U.S. That agency, Health and Human Services Administration for Children and Families, has 11,200 unaccompanied children in its care, and it takes 45 days on average to place a child with a sponsor, according to a spokesperson for HHS. 11,200 unaccompanied children. What would you think, my white brother, my white sister, my black brother, my black sister, whatever the race you are, what would you think, my fellow American, if one of those kids were yours? Maybe not your son or daughter, but maybe your cousin's kid or your maybe someone who is second or third cousin to you, or maybe a niece or nephew. What would you do? Would you just sit back on your ass and just say, well, yeah, it's pretty awful? Now, I know what you would do. You would present yourself at HHS and say, I will take my niece. I will house my nephew. At least that's what I hope you would do. It's damn sure what I would do. But what happens to these kids? I mean, can you think about that for a minute? I know this is much worse than thinking about the puppy that's being eaten alive by a snapping turtle. This is some human tragedy. But a kid, an 8-year-old, you know, tender age children, as they're referred to by the Department of Homeland Security, tender age children. Those are kids younger than 12. So take an 8-year-old. You've probably had experience with 8-year-olds. I have. You know, they're inquisitive. They, if they're in school and they have a decent family background and adequate nutrition and health care, they're third graders. They just want to learn. They're like a sponge that just wants to soak up everything. Now, consider those kids in a nice school. They're doing just fine. Now consider those kids in a what amounts to a police station for the Department of Homeland Security Border Patrol, where they are waiting and waiting, and then they're going to be shipped someplace, and there are 11,000 of them waiting to be shipped like they were, what, bags of coffee beans or something, huh? This is Trump's America. This is our America. This is where you and I live. This is what you and I allow to happen. Because if it were bad enough, wouldn't we demand that these pigs in the Republican Party impeach and remove this son of a bitch? Apparently, it's not bad enough. Or, that's A. B, the Republicans, who no longer exist, the American Fascist Party members, they don't care. They just don't care. They're not there to govern. They're there to steal. They're not there to govern. They're there to obstruct justice. They're not there to govern. By there, I mean the Congress. They are there to perform all sorts of devious shit that may benefit them, but damn sure is not going to benefit the people who put them there. And then when they're up for re-election, they run these hate-filled fucking ads that shows their opponent to be worse than some kind of an ogre that just came out of a swamp somewhere in the deepest jungles of Louisiana. You want that person to represent you, or you want me? I'm a good American. unaccompanied children are in the care of Health and Human Services Administration for Children and Families. So, they need to put these little rugrats someplace. So here's the deal. Health and Human Service officials will soon tour military installations near the Texas border as they search for more space to house children, because there are going to be more of them. The officials will tour Dyess Air Force Base, Goodfellow Air Force Base, and Fort Bliss. Yes, indeed. According to a spokesman, Health and Human Services will make the determination if they will use any of the three sites for the unaccompanied children. Oh, UAC, unaccompanied alien children. Alien. According to a former Obama administration official, yep, military bases have been used to house migrant children in the past, but only as a last resort, not a first resort. And all this comes from the fact that back in May, this rat fucker in the White House began enforcing what he called a zero-tolerance policy on the southern border, prosecuting any adult who had the absolute temerity to believe that as a political refugee or an economic refugee or someone who was fearful for their lives, if they presented themselves at the border, that their request would at least be considered, not that their children would be taken from them and they would be put in detention. The kids, who the fuck knows? There's 11,500 children in the custody of the Department of Health and Human Services. Just as an experiment, wouldn't you love to go to HHS and say, could you tell me where Maria Gonzalez is housed right now? She's 8 years old. She's from Guatemala. And even if you were Maria Gonzalez's aunt or grandma or blood relative, do you think HHS could tell you precisely in the moment where your kid was? I don't think so either. Anyway, NBC goes on. Parents traveling with children are separated from their kids while they face legal proceedings. Two U.S. officials said Health and Human Services was not given proper warning of the new policy and was caught unprepared at the influx of children. Trump doesn't give a fuck. Trump hates children until they grow up and develop nice chests and wear tight clothing and have a nice rounded, well, you know. And if that's your daughter, you can go on the radio with Howard Stern and say, yeah, if it was my daughter, I would probably be dating her. Dating was Trump's code word for fucking, right? Yes, right. So with a monster like that, a potential incestuous son of a bitch like Trump, where it concerns his own children, do you think he would have anything other than a zero tolerance policy for children of migrants, refugees? No. Peter Bugard, a former Department of Health, Homeland Security, and former White House official of the Obama administration, who is now a spokesman for the immigration reform group, FW.US, Peter said this, quote, what's happening now is a broad indication of a total lack of planning or forethought for the policy they enacted, they being the Trump. They didn't think this through at all, what it would mean for the kids, what it would mean for their parents, and what it would mean for the operational challenges to try to handle this. Instead of having Border Patrol agents at the border, you have them now trying to take care of kids at border stations. End quote. Oh, and to add insult to the monstrous stupidity and filth and perversion of this goddamn Trump administration, try this on. The Trump administration recently started requiring Health and Human Services to fingerprint people claiming to be parents of unaccompanied children, a move the previous administration said would delay children from being reunited with their families and scare undocumented parents away from coming forward. Sometime when you have the time, and I've done this, when you have the time, use your Google monster and get on your computer and use whatever keywords you want to use. But find, and there's tons of this, find information about what the Nazis did to the Jews before they started burning them alive. Read about the requirements to be identified. The most obvious was the Yellow Star of David. But read about the registries. And then think about what this fucking Trump is doing at our southern border. He's not doing it at the northern border. Why not? Well, you know, those are all Norwegians. Well, Canadians, who knows the difference? No offense to Canadians. I think Canadians are wonderful. I'm talking about this asshole who comes up with this kind of policy. It's not a policy. It's a punitive action, the playbook for which was written about 80 years ago. In Germany. by members of the master race. All right. Take a break. When we come back, I'm going to share with you something Jennifer Rubin, who has become my favorite conservative writer. She writes the Right Turn opinion column at the Washington Post. Jennifer Rubin, you've probably seen her on MSNBC many times. She's the kind of conservative that I could live next door to. She has a column, Why It's Essential to Go After Trump for Obstruction of Justice. We'll be right back.
Like the promises they did not keep, and how they fenced us in like sheep, said to us, come take care of him, set us up on mission lane, told us to read, to write and pray. Then they took
Yeah, maybe I won't get to the election stuff, primary stuff that's occurring today all over the country. This June 5th primary. If these primaries are occurring in your state and you are not a fascist, I think you should go vote. If you are a fascist, stay home. They don't need your vote. The plan is to take over the country with force. So you fascists, just stay home. That's the best thing for you to do. But normal people, I think it's very important to go vote. We had our primary here in Georgia about a week ago. And as a result of that primary, a little bit of history was made. Not that this is the primary result of the primary. But the little bit of history made was that we now have running on the Democratic ticket an African-American female who has had lots of experience in the Georgia General Assembly, the legislature. She's Harvard educated, and she's running against, we don't know yet, but the two white men against whom she's going to run are a couple of the most obvious doofuses I think you could possibly come up with. They are caricatures of white, ignorant, Christian, conservative men. One of them, the reason they're in a runoff, Casey Cagle, who is... If you look up the word doofus in the dictionary, you'll find Casey Cagle's picture. He's Lieutenant Governor right now. And the one he's running against in the runoff is, what's the guy's name? The one with all the guns. In his political ads running up to the primary, he pointed a gun at a teenager who was there to date his daughter, pointed a shotgun. I think it was probably a 30 caliber rifle. Pointed at this, you know, after, no, it had to be a shotgun because he lifted the barrel up, clicked it in place, pointed it at the kid. So please go vote. If Democrats do what they did because they just weren't going to vote for Hillary Clinton, then what? Well, someone has said it in the past, Americans get the kind of government they deserve. Anyway, Jennifer Rubin, this is what she wrote last night, posted this morning, before 10 o'clock this morning. Jennifer writes, federal prosecutors accused former Trump presidential campaign chairman Paul Manafort of witness tampering late Monday in his criminal case, and asked a federal judge to consider revoking or revising his release. Now, because we are recording our podcast here in the middle of the day, I don't know if the court will resolve this issue before our podcast goes across the internet this evening. But what federal prosecutors are asking for is that Manafort be put in fucking jail. I mean, witness tampering is Manafort's going to be in prison for the rest of his life. Anyway, Prosecutors accused Manafort and a longtime associate they linked to Russian intelligence of repeatedly contacting two members of a public relations firm and asking them to falsely testify about secret lobbying they did at Manafort's request. In court documents, prosecutors with special counsel Robert Mueller alleged that Manafort and his associate, referred to only as Person A, tried to contact the two witnesses by phone and through encrypted messaging apps. FBI agent Brock Dahman said that one of the public relations firm's executives, identified as Person D1, told the government he, quote, understood Manafort's outreach to be an effort to suborn perjury, end quote, by encouraging others to lie to federal investigators by concealing the firm's work in the United States. Suborn perjury. Holy fuck. Huh? Let's pause to consider how reckless, how downright dimwitted it is to attempt to suborn perjury electronically while out on bail. Well, Manafort has never been known for his brilliance, right? Even the densest criminal, Jennifer writes, would suspect that his communications were being monitored. In a case involving bank and tax fraud, money laundering, and more, Manafort allegedly took action that would not only be a serious felony to add to the long list of charges, but also would present powerful evidence of a guilty mind in the other crimes for which he's been indicted. One might also conclude that someone confident of receiving a pardon would not behave in such a manner. He'd just sit back to wait for the missive from his president. Needless to say, innocent people don't ordinarily resort to falsifying evidence to prove their innocence. Come to think of it, neither do they draft exculpatory statements falsely explaining a meeting before the election with a Kremlin-linked lawyer and their son, son-in-law, and campaign chairman. And yet, multiple denials that the president had anything to do with such a statement, which explains the purpose of the June 26th Trump Tower meeting. The multiple denials that the president had anything to do with such a statement are now inoperative, we learn. The official story is that Trump did draft that untrue statement during an investigation, FBI investigation, an investigation into Russian collusion. Manafort is not alone in his recklessness, it seems. Yeah, that came out the other day, right? Oh, yeah, well, we just now are recollecting that, yeah, goddamn, the president did write up that statement. Thanks to Manafort and to the president's assertion that he cannot obstruct justice, and he can also pardon himself, we now have public attention focused on the crime of obstruction of justice, which is serious for any private individual, and a fatal breach of the president's oath to, quote, take care that the laws are fully executed. What a fucking joke that is, huh? Even Republicans are fessing up that obstruction is a really big deal when a president can be prosecuted in office or after office or merely impeached. If Mueller does have credible proof of obstruction, how soon would Senator Pat Toomey, Republican of Pennsylvania, wriggle out of voting to convict after telling us, I will tell you my own view, is it's entirely possible for a president to obstruct justice. If a president committed perjury to lie or to mislead investigators, if he outraged others, if he destroyed evidence. Uh-oh. Likewise, how would Senator Richard Shelby, Republican of Alabama, who voted to remove President Bill Clinton on obstruction of justice, get around voting to convict Trump if the facts were sufficient? Indeed, a whole bunch of Republicans currently in the Senate voted to remove Clinton on obstruction grounds. Mitch McConnell, Mike Crapo, Chuck Grassley, Pat Roberts, Jim Inhofe, Mike Enzi, Thad Cochran, Orrin Hatch, and Lindsey Graham was a House floor manager for the impeachment vote. Do you think they would vote to remove Trump? Trump is arguing that a president can do no wrong, but that has never been the position of any court or of the Justice Department. Remember that the Justice Department's Office of Legal Counsel's opinion in both 1973 and 2000 never questioned that a president could be prosecuted, let alone escape impeachment. The Office of Legal Counsel wrote in 2000 the following. Quote, recognizing an immunity from prosecution for a sitting president would not preclude such prosecution once the president's term is over or he is otherwise removed from office by resignation or impeachment. The relevant question, therefore, is the nature and strength of any governmental interests in immediate prosecution and punishment. End quote. Moreover, Jennifer Rubin writes, there is a powerful argument that the Constitution never envisioned immunity for the president. Norman Eisen and Elizabeth Holtzman write the following, Holtzman being a former member of Congress, quote, there is no explicit declaration in the text of our Constitution that provides immunity to the president while in office for crimes that he or she commits. In addition, while the text of the Constitution is silent on presidential immunity, it is explicit on congressional immunity. No member of Congress may be prosecuted for what is said during speech and debate. Plainly, the framers knew how to provide for immunity when they wanted to. So their failure to do so for the president strongly implies that they didn't believe it was appropriate in that case. End quote. Rubin goes on, put differently, Trump will need a better argument than he cannot obstruct justice by exercising his Article II powers. Not only is it clear he can be impeached for such conduct and prosecuted after he leaves office, but some of the most damning evidence, like the drafting of inaccurate account of the Trump Tower meeting, cannot even be considered to be an exercise of his Article II powers, as would firing an FBI director. Come to think of it, pestering his attorney general to reverse a recusal wouldn't be an exercise in Article II powers. Nor would making up a deliberate lie to smear law enforcement or coming up with a phony cover story to explain the firing of the FBI director. In other words, none of that stuff is allowed, as Trump is trying to say, under Article 2 of the Constitution where it concerns a president's powers. That's bullshit. But then that's Trump. Come to think of it, Rubin writes, Trump's defense to prosecution or to impeachment for obstruction is no defense at all. The danger of allowing obstruction to go unchecked is underscored by none other than Manafort. Without strict enforcement of laws against obstruction, witness tampering, and so forth, the criminal justice system becomes a circus, which, although Rubin doesn't write it, is exactly what Trump wants. Back to Rubin. Trump badly misplayed this in another respect. If he plans on battling in court over a subpoena, you can bet that judges will be reluctant to give him even a smidgen of credence to his delusions that he is above the law. Trump revealed where he is headed with these arguments: to criminality without consequences. That's what Trump wants. to be able to do any fucking thing he wants to with no consequences. I could shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue. They wouldn't do a thing to me. Rubin, the federal courts have every reason to stop an executive power grab that would deprive the judiciary of any power over the president or ex-president. Trump, therefore, managed to rouse Republicans and, more important, the courts, where his effort to evade testifying might eventually be heard. Jennifer Rubin at the Washington Post explaining why it is not a choice, not necessary, but essential to go after Trump on obstruction charges. And this business with Manafort, holy shit, is this the dumbest, stupidest white man ever? Huh? I say white man because, you know, white people are supposed to be so fucking smart, right? Witness tampering. Prosecutors accused Manafort and a longtime associate they linked to Russian intelligence of repeatedly contacting two members of a public relations firm and asking them to falsely testify about the secret lobbying they did at Manafort's behest. The firm of former senior European officials, informally known as the Habsburg Group, was secretly retained in 2012 by Manafort to advocate for Ukraine, where Manafort had clients. In court documents, prosecutors with special counsel Robert Mueller alleged that Manafort and his associates tried to contact the two witnesses by phone and through encrypted message apps. The description of Person A matches his longtime business colleague in Ukraine, Konstantin Kilimnik. Spokesman for Manafort declined to comment. Yeah, I guess so. Jesus, bleeding Christ. Manafort has pleaded not guilty to conspiracy, money laundering, tax fraud, bank fraud related to his lobbying work for the pro-Russian political party in Ukraine, and former Ukrainian President Viktor Yanukovych. The filings Monday marked the second time prosecutors have complained to the judge about Manafort's behavior awaiting trial. Early in the case, after he was released to his home, the investigators said they intercepted emails showing Manafort helped write an opinion piece defending his actions that ran in Ukrainian publications. You know, it is just beyond me why a court would not order this son of a bitch into a jail cell. Manafort is demonstrating what every single member of the Trump administration believes, that the law is for you or me or the rest of us schmucks, not for them. Not for them, not ever for them. Whether it's Betsy DeVos or this asshole who used to be the attorney general in Oklahoma. What's his name? Kathy, head of the EPA. Yeah, Pruitt. It doesn't make any difference who it is. If they're connected with Trump, they are a fucking criminal by definition. And they believe, as demonstrated by their actions, that the law is an ass. Who said that? That's from Shakespeare, but what play?
I don't either.
Merchant of Venice? But these people really believe it. That there is no, I mean, why follow the law when a shorter cut with much more to gain, if you're not caught, is to follow criminal action? I mean, that's what every single criminal in the history of the human race has always believed. Manafort believes it. Trump believes it. The Trump bastard boys believe it, that always beautifully groomed and shod and combed. Ivanka believes it. The law's for somebody else. Playing by the rules is, oh, that's so gauche. It really is. Playing by the rules, oh, please. Who plays by the rules these days, right? I mean, if you are a politician, why the fuck would you play by the rules, especially if you're a right-wing politician? What is to be gained there? I mean, you already have the Christian psychos in this country who swear that God put you in the Oval Office. So what the fuck difference does it make to your base? All these mouth-breathing Christians. What difference does it make if you're a liar? You suborn perjury, you're a cheat, you're a thug, you're a deceiver, and you like to grab women by their pussies. What difference does any of it make? The Christians love you. And they're going to vote for you again. And again and again and again, if they could. Because they know something that we non-evangelical Christians don't know. And that is this. They know that the ascension of Trump to the U.S. presidency was engineered not by Russian intelligence officers using Facebook, but by the very hand of God. Yes. Look at the adoring look that Mike Pence beams to his beloved. Even to the back of his fucking head, he'll stand there, Pence, with this Stepford wife look on his face. Oh, Donald, you make my liver quiver. Oh, Donald, I'm staring at the face of, well, not the Messiah, but the almost Messiah. And I'm staring at the back of his head, too. So, Trump, you know, Trump knows. Somebody went to Trump and said, look, do you realize what percentage of these evangelical Christians voted for you? And Trump probably said, no, I have no idea. And the other person said, and it was probably the little Nazi Jew, Stephen Miller, who finds this very jokey. Well, so do I. But the little Nazi Jew, Stephen Miller, probably said, well, let me tell you, mein Lieder, 80 plus percent of the Christians voted for you. And I'm sure Trump's response was, well, after I moved the embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, I hope 80% of you Jews will vote for me when I run for re-election. And I'm sure the little Nazi Jew Stephen Miller said something to the effect of, don't worry, it's in the works. Crazy stuff, huh? That's about it for me, from me, for this little podcast. I hope you had as good a time as I did. And remember, we need sponsors, and it's only $50. You sponsor the whole program for $50. And it only runs through the 21st or 22nd of this month. So, por favor, contribute, donate, sponsor. I'll see you next time. In the meantime, take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.